remember that somewhere in the history, like, St. Andrews was like kind of like an AMIA church, but now they're not. They're affiliated with something a little different. And I may be wrong.
There are handouts on the back, sorry.
I may be wrong, and I apologize if, to repeat yourself if you talked about this yesterday, but I just wondered if you could answer that.
Yeah, we're still with what's called the Anglican Mission in the Americas.
Okay.
There's a bigger narrative that goes to that.
Okay.
And we can just talk about it in length or however long is good to you at some other point, if that's okay. But the short of it is that we've always been a part of the AMIA, and we are still a part of the AMIA. But it is true that there are other evangelical expressions of Anglicanism in the United States. And we, AMIA was the first, in a way, but now it's not the only. Over the past 10 to 15 years, there have been other expressions that are really similar in its heart to the AMIA. But yeah, we're still a part of that. Other comments or things that stuck out to you from yesterday? Yeah, Paul.
It wasn't specifically mentioned, but it's in some of the printed material of the word, the Celtic model.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about that as to the pattern of the Celtic model and how that's described or expressed at St. Andrews.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Part of what I'm going to do throughout this class is I might say we're going to wait on that because we're going to get at it. And that question we're actually going to get at the end. What the Celtic model is,
yes,
is it describes how we are on mission.
Yes.
And actually, one of our, I forget which week it is, it's week 6, we'll dig into a little bit more about what it looks like, the shape of our mission. So that's what that is. Good
Maybe
question.
My question gives a little curiosity for all of us.
Good. That's good. And that too, for what it's worth, in terms of like what the goal of this class is, that's one of my goals for us, is that we would have this curiosity. A curiosity about what's St. Andrews all about. What does liturgy and discipleship look like at St. Andrews, and what does it look like for us to get in on it? But not only what's going on, curiosity about what's going on out there, but also just curiosity about what God's doing in you and through you during the season of your life. That was something that we really jumped into yesterday. Is kind of, what season are you guys in? And I loved y'all's vulnerability and openness in describing that. So curiosity is a goal of this. Yes?
Okay. I have a question about, and I'm just like a sponge right now.
Perfect.
All of this.
Soak it up.
I couldn't even sleep last night. I'm soaking so much.
Yeah. All right. That's great.
The cats are tired.
That's great.
They get off the comforter. Anyway, I have a question about baptism.
Yeah.
I am confused. And here's, even though I'm almost 59, I Google everything. I Google baptism. I Google this. I'm watching my haunted house. Will the demon come get me now? I want to know all these things. Do you not dunk? Does Anglican religion, you don't dunk? Are you sprinkled when you're baptized?
Yeah, the short answer to that question is that it depends. Here, because we don't have, because we do infant baptism, some expressions of Christianity actually dunk infants, but because we do infant baptism historically, like, we don't dunk infants. Even though there are some denominations that do, the Eastern Orthodox Christians actually will kerchunk, Talk about like, wah! And they'll do it 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Kerchunk, kerchunk, kerchunk. But the short answer for us is that, isn't that the noise that it makes?
Yeah.
Kerchunk? Is that it doesn't, we don't have like a full, baptismal thing.
Baptistry.
A baptistry? There's the word. Mm-hmm. Baptistry.
Baptistry.
It's the font is what that's called, the baptismal font. If we had one of those, I would, if there were like an adult or a kid, we would probably do a full immersion. Good question. And I know there are probably lots of other questions about specifics about baptism. And we can work some of those out either later on in the class or in private conversation, just because there's just so much to say about that kind of thing. That's a really good, really good question. Other questions or comments, things that stuck out to you from yesterday?
We were just, you know, on the way home, we were just talking about how in all areas of our lives, it feels like God's ordaining people to kind of be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just started working again at Little Rock Christian, mm-hmm. and in the, like, new employee meeting, we're all talking about how we all got there, and it's just amazing how God's, like, pulled each person's life in there.
Mm-hmm.
And she just started school, and it was the same thing, where it's amazing how God has just, like, pulled all of these diverse people into this one specific group. And it felt that way yesterday, like being in class with you guys and hearing y'all's stories, that God is just, you know, pulling us all together for a purpose. And it just feels like a movement. Like we get to be a part of that. And that's what jumped out to me. It wasn't really doctrinal or question.
That's great.
It was just kind of
awesome
to be a part of this tide. It felt like a tide.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
I like that.
I like that too.
That's great. And, that brings me kind of to the kind of segues into our time here. And Kathy said this yesterday, but I want to emphasize it again. Like we do not presume to know how this process is going to play out for you guys. So one of the things that we want to try to be intentional about is not using this time to try to sell St. Andrews to you. As if our goal is to just get as many people here as possible. Rather, what we want to do is walk alongside you in this place where you are in this journey, helping you be attentive to what God's doing. If that means that you guys end up being here with us for a short season or an extended season or just for this time, then like we just want to bless you guys unto that, unto how God is bringing our stories together. So that's kind of our goal. So at the end of this process, but also throughout this process too, we want to be available to you. Me or Robert or Dustin or Kathy, I know would love to talk to you about how God's at work in your life during this season. So just let us know. So the framework for this class, what is this class all about? Well, we're going to look at two big things. We're going to look at liturgy and discipleship. And more specifically, what we're going to look at is how those things relate together. Because I would say, I mean, there's a lot of things, and we heard a lot about those yesterday, but there are a lot of things that characterize St. Andrews, but two things that really stick out. That to me help answer the question, like, what is St. Andrews all about and how do we step into that? Our liturgy and discipleship. So what we're going to do throughout this time is we're going to look at both of those. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of use the liturgy, the different movements, the shape of the liturgy as a lens through which we come to understand what it looks like to follow Jesus on a daily basis. So in a way, like how what we do in there extends out from that space, from Sunday morning, and informs how we follow Jesus in daily, ordinary, mundane, humdrum, good, bad, big, small life. So that's what, and we're going to paint a big picture of that. So all questions won't be answered. Again, like more than anything, I want to evoke a kind of a curiosity that becomes a pathway for a conversation that we can have together and that you and God can have together. So let's start with discipleship, talking about what discipleship is all about. And kind of the first question is, why would we talk about discipleship at all at St. Andrews? When we talk about discipleship, we emphasize discipleship because we believe that discipleship and a disciple is kind of the basic answer to that question, how do we exist as God's people? It kind of like if you're like, okay, we're Christians. Well, so what? What does that look like? What does that mean? How do we exist as Christians? Well, we believe that the basic answer to that question is how do we live as God's people? Is we live as disciples. We live as disciples. So what kinds of things, when you hear the word disciple or discipleship, what kinds of things come to your mind? What does that word evoke in you guys? You can just shout it out.
Jesus.
Walking beside. What else is it evoke?
Think of like a master craftsman.
Yeah.
Like teaching an intern.
Yeah.
Like, there's somebody who doesn't know who's with this person who does.
Yeah.
And they're gleaning.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily overt teaching all the time.
Right.
It's like you get to watch, you get to model. I'm a teacher, so this is kind of how I do things.
Yeah.
But Jesus is teacher, and we get to walk along with him.
Yeah. Yeah, that model that you see, like, in the world itself, so, like, not just, like, in the Christian world, but in the world, you see this model of apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
Where people attach their lives to someone else in order to become like them. What else kind of comes to your mind as you you hear the word disciple or you hear discipleship? Anything else jump out to you?
Pilgrimage together.
Yeah, there's a journey to it. The word. You know, if you're attaching your life to someone, then you're following that person. And if you're following, that kind of implies that you're going somewhere. You're on a pilgrimage. Good. That's really good. So there's a lot to say about discipleship and what discipleship is, and there's a lot of ways to define it. But we want to keep it just as simple as possible. Kind of the way that my mind works is, like, I want to start with, like, the most simple bit. And then, like, as we're ready, pull back layers on it. And the most simple thing that we can say about what it means to be a disciple is just simply to be a follower of Jesus.
Right.
A follower of Jesus. And if we were to peel that back one more layer, we would say a disciple is someone who follows Jesus, who attaches their life to his, in order to become like him. So someone who follows Jesus, and this is why it's key. So not just to, like, get something from him. Not just so that he can make us more happy and healthy people. But following Jesus, doing what he does, imitating his life, and as we can peel back some more, receiving his life so that we can become more like him. And so this is a big shift in some Christian circles, especially expressions of Christianity that have sometimes grown up in the modern West. So we want that picture of being a disciple of Jesus, being a community of disciples of Jesus, to stand in contrast to being consumers of religious products. So being a follower of Jesus in order to learn from him how to be like him, how to live his life, rather than just being consumers of religious products. So you'll see there on your handout, I have a little bit longer of a definition. And that definition is one that's kind of like, I want to staple up there, that's going to get worked out over the next 5 weeks. And the definition is that discipleship is the transformation and reorientation that takes place as we daily follow Jesus and invite others to do the same. So each of those bits, there's kind of a little bit of weight to it, you know, a little bit of, there's an entrance point that we want to wade slowly deeper and deeper into. The transformation and reorientation, Robert yesterday emphasized that, you remember how he was talking about order and reordering? The transformation and reorientation that takes place as we daily follow Jesus and invite others to do the same. So just really quick touching on that, transformation is key because we're affirming the fact that when we attach our lives to Jesus, as we learn to feast on God's grace, to embrace it, like, we become more like Jesus. And in fact, like, as we read the scriptures, that's God's heart. Not just that we get a ticket to go to a different place when we die, but that even here and now we begin to experience God's life, to be transformed more into His image. And we'll unfold that some more. Reorientation is a key word because it affirms that what's happening as we're following Jesus is we're learning to see the world differently. It's being our point of reference is being reoriented. Everything is changing. I talked a little bit about that in my sermon last week. Everything is changing. It's reoriented how we see the world, how we see one another, how we see God, and how we see ourselves. So different priorities, different passions, different way of life. Not just what I call the Jesus glaze. The Jesus glaze. Am I saying Jesus glaze? That's kind of hard to say right now. Jesus glaze. So think of like a donut, you know, and you've just got this glaze on the top of the donut. So this is not like we're just going to, as Christians, we have our life. And it is what it is. And we just put this Christian-y glaze on the top of it. Right? But what we're talking about is this lifelong process of following Jesus. That from the inside out, there is this renovation, complete renovation of our lives taking place. Such that we're being transformed and reoriented. So that's what we want to be about at St. Andrew's. And I should probably say, from the beginning, we don't always get this right. We too are in the process of being learners. Even me and Dustin and Robert, we are in the process of learning how to live more fully into this. What we're doing as a community is we're coming together and we're saying, how do we be intentional about this? How does this become the water that we swim in? And so this is not just, discipleship for us is not just a program. It's not like, you know, we've got like children's stuff and we got mission stuff and we've got some altar guild stuff and we got discipleship stuff. Like, no, it's discipleship is the thing. It's the main thing. It is the central core around which we hope that everything else catches orbit. Such that with anything, like whether it be the children's stuff or the altar guild or how we go out and be present with a school called the Wilson School, or the way that we gather together and eat together, all of that stuff, we want to ask, how does this relate to being a disciple? If our fundamental posture as Christians is attaching our lives to Jesus in order to become more like Him, then how does it even change how we do those things? How does it change how we worship? If our fundamental posture is not about being religious consumers, but about following Jesus, how does it change? Fill in the blank. Those are the kinds of questions that we're wanting to ask. And someone already hit on this a little bit, but one of the things that we're kind of affirming in discipleship is that when you look at Jesus' life, so you read the Gospels, you look at Jesus' life, you see, this isn't going to stand out, I'm going to grab another color, but there are the words, the works, and the ways of Jesus. And remember, like this is Jesus' life, and we want to attach our life to His. And sometimes we're really good at the words. What does Jesus say? Which is really important. It's so important. And actually, what's really interesting, and maybe if you've got space for this, like just go through and read the Gospels and actually read what He says. Because often, the impression that we get about what Jesus says is not exactly what He says.
Right.
You might be surprised about some of the things that Jesus actually says. But sometimes we're good at getting the words of Jesus, or at least the things that we think are the words of Jesus. And even sometimes, we're good at getting the works of Jesus. So what are the things that Jesus did? Some people ignore the works of Jesus and just stick to their words. They don't ever do anything that Jesus did. They just read His words, know that they understand His words. But some of us just get really focused in on the works of Jesus. healing the sick, being with the poor, tending to the brokenhearted. We're affirming that both of these are important, the words of Jesus, the works of Jesus, but we're also affirming that Jesus has a way. And in fact, not only does Jesus have a way, he is the way. And if we miss Jesus' way, we're not going to get his words and works right. Because it's possible, we're affirming, to do the Jesus words and the Jesus works, but not in the Jesus way. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
About Christians who say things, you're like, okay, I know that you're quoting Jesus right now, but like, that doesn't feel right. And there may be a lot going on there, but what may be going on is what you're sensing is that Jesus' words or his works have gotten detached from his ways. So we want to give attention to how Jesus lived his life. And then when we live our life, we want to pay attention not only to what we say and what we do, but how we do those things. Yeah.
St. Francis said something that is so short and simple, but so profound.
Yeah.
He said, preach the gospel, use words that are necessary.
Yeah.
And I love that because, you know, many of us on our jobs, that's the best we can do.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, when we're out in the world on our jobs and whatnot.
Yeah. That's so good. That's really good. And one of the things that, no, that's good. I'll leave it there. I'm always like trying to stay away from these, like, because I want to chase down so many different things. It's like, ah, that's really good. Let's go for that. But I'm okay. Liturgy. Liturgy. What kinds of things come to your mind when you hear the word liturgy? It doesn't have to be good or bad or right. Just what comes to your mind when you hear the word liturgy?
Tradition.
Tradition.
Repetition.
Repetition.
Common.
Work of the people. What else comes to your mind when you hear the word liturgy?
Rhythm.
Rhythm. That's fancy.
Yeah.
Wait, truth? Truth. Yeah, truth.
Participation.
Participation.
A model.
A model. Does anybody, just as a, you don't have to raise your hands, but I am asking for a show of hands. Is there anyone who, or I'll ask it this way. Who in the room more, like, when you hear the word liturgy, you're more like, ooh. Yeah, so there's some, that there's a little bit of like.
I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, so.
I've never been in a liturgical church.
Yeah, so who in the room, when you hear the word liturgy, you're more like, huh?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, so some people are like, whoa, you know, I know I've heard that some of you have come from more Catholic backgrounds, and maybe that time in the Catholic Church like wasn't life giving to you, and so it was dead, and so you're like liturgy, you're like, that's what I left, and some of us are like, huh, and some of us are more on the like, yeah, I've experienced that as life. Well, just very simply, and again, I'm trying to start with the most simple terms, liturgy, quite simply, is just a pattern for worship. Liturgy is a pattern for worship. A pattern for worship, and this is something that we're going to kind of like dig more deeply into, but what I suggest is that this pattern, everybody's got this pattern. Okay, so I'm going to affirm two things. Is that liturgy is not something that just happens in churches. That worship is not something that just happens among Christians. That I'm suggesting that everybody has a pattern. And everybody worships. What I'm suggesting is that everybody, whether you call yourself a believer, an unbeliever, or whatever, everyone has something in their life that they love as ultimate. And what they do, no matter who you are, you shape your life around that thing that you love as ultimate, whether it be God or baseball or the government or business or whatever. That we all have this pattern of worship. We all have a liturgy. And so in that vein, what I suggest is that each pattern of worship rehearses a story. Every pattern of worship rehearses some story. A story that gives a narrative about why things are the way they are. About what's most true. About where the world is headed. About who's in charge. And you could go on. So every pattern of worship tells, it rehearses. So think of like a play. It's rehearsing. It's going through these movements, this shape, this pattern. Someone said rhythm. It's going through this rhythm that is attached to, it's tethered to, a picture of something as ultimate. And that ultimate thing tells a story about the world. And so as Christians, what we're doing is we're saying that we want our rhythm, our pattern for a life, both in there and out there, to be ordered by, to rehearse the one true story of all things, which is the story of God revealing himself in Christ. So I know that it's like, okay, there's a lot to chew on right there, but that is what we're going to unfold in the weeks to come, is these habits and patterns that characterize our life as Christians. The habits and patterns that characterize our life as Christians. And one of the things too, and this gets, this can get a little bit confusing, but I want to go ahead and nail it down out front, because it's going to take some unfolding, and I'm still learning how this is true. But liturgy is not something that we do. But it is something that we participate in. It is something that God is shaping us unto. So one of the things I'm suggesting is that these patterns for worship that everyone is a part of, these patterns of worship form us. They form us into certain types of people who love certain things, who prioritize certain things, whose lives give off a certain character. And so when we're looking at liturgy, we're looking at how God's story, how his action in the past, in the present, and in the future is shaping our life and is forming us into his image. So that's, again, I'm just trying to give you a taste of kind of what we're going to unfold here. Again, as we move on in the weeks, we're just going to look at different parts of the Sunday morning liturgy, and we're going to ask more like, what's going on here? What does it say about God's bigger story? What are those rhythms and the patterns? What are they getting at? And how does it influence the way that we follow Jesus and attach our lives to him in order to become more like him? So we're out of time for this morning, but two things that I want to send you out with. One is just be a curious observer this week. I know it'll be a little bit harder because you have to do it kind of post facto if you've already been to service, but if you haven't been to the worship service yet, just go in there with a little bit of curiosity. Like, what sticks out to you? What do you notice? Why do you think it sticks out to you? And don't feel like you have to answer that yet. And don't feel like you have to even pass judgments on it yet. And this is the more difficult part. But I'm also encouraging you to go out to be curious about your own life. And so here's a key phrase that is helpful for me, the type of curiosity that I'm looking for, compassionate curiosity. What do you notice in your own life? And I put it there on your handout. There's this question. It says, if someone evaluated my habits and practices, so use your imagination, if there's this weird scenario where some scientist got assigned to study your life, but like as an objective observer, you know, like what would that scientist notice about you? About your habits and practices, the way that you live your life, the things that characterize, the things that you do when you're not thinking about what to do.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. And who would they say that I want to be like? Again, just what do you notice? Don't pass judgment on what you notice. Just what do you notice? Compassionate curiosity. All right. Kathy, you want to give a shout out to what is going on the back table there?